RadioRadio.com.
Yeah.
My name is Mad Max, and I approve this message.
DJ Max Heat, Conscious Thoughts, Conscious Entertainment LLC, ConsciousEntertainmentRadio.com, ConsciousEntertainment.us, and .com, RealHotChat.com, RealHotChat.com, RealHotChat, MuseArtWorld.org. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, all over, Blogger, Onzi, everybody out there know me. This is Conscious Entertainment, DJ Max Heat.
Hello.
All right, Mr. Melfi, I apologize for all the delays and all the hassle, but we're definitely ready to go now. All right.
Well, there you have it. Well, no big deal.
Speaking today again with Mr. Pat Melfi. Melfi, if Mr. Melfi, do you mind introducing yourself to the audience, maybe giving them a brief description of who you are?
I'm just a man working for God.
All right.
And just out and about trying to accomplish the great mission of cleaning up the music business.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, somebody needs to.
I'm glad you stated it that way. You know, there's a lot of information going on about music art and just a lot of different awareness about the music industry and the lyrics and the state. But people usually don't state it that way, cleaning up the music industry. Now, MuseArt, you mentioned MuseArt. MuseArt is the basis of this interview. MuseArt is a public charity, nonprofit foundation that's built to help keep arts, music and arts in the schools. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's the main goal.
Now, how long has MuseArt been in effect, sir?
We're on our 8th year right now. We have about 63 schools around the United States already employing our practice and on track to be at about 85 by the end of the year.
Now, the MuseArt Foundation was created by you and a few other individuals. When you created this particular foundation, what was the goal that you had in mind? Personally, what was the goal?
The main mission for MuseArt is to mandate music and arts back into the school by establishing the value of music and arts. More specific to music, but there's a value in both of them that are run very similar to one another. The idea is that in the generation that we live in today, our industry executives and leaders have been behind the eight ball on the digital era, and it has allowed the generation of yesterday and today to download music for free, which is, in my opinion, a way to diminish the value of music. And the value of music goes far beyond becoming a professional musician. I mean, there are many scientists and doctors and lawyers and teachers and all kinds of people that are in different forms of vocation that excel to the top areas of their industries through studying music in school. I mean, it was probably not necessarily the factor, but it was a contributing factor. We all know that music, you know, children who study music have 30 to 40% higher reading comprehension than children that don't. And that being said, the, you know, gives them a better academic result, I would think. And that might lead them to become better citizens. And of course, that makes this a better world. You know,
so
but a lot of people.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Yeah. A lot of people that study music, though, don't necessarily go off and become professional musicians. I mean, they become other things as well. So,
yes.
You know, I can't imagine what a world might look like 10 years from now without music in it.
Man, to think about what the world would be now without music, I mean, which is essentially what it sounds like is that, you know, music is like a fundamental foundation that is necessary to enhance like productivity or success in the youth and just in our population in general. And even though you don't have to become a musician technically to utilize the power of music and the importance of music, you can become a doctor and a lawyer, but music helps you get wherever you want to go. That's what it sounds like you're saying to me.
Exactly. And not to mention that it is the universal language of the world. It speaks to the heart. It speaks in all languages. And it speaks at any time you choose to listen to it. And if you think about our youth today and you walk up and down the streets, I'm certain that you won't find very many of them without a set of ears hanging from their ears.
I know that's right. That's the truth.
Yeah. And see, and unfortunately, that somewhat creates a void, you know, at radio level. If the youth is busy listening to iPods and TiVos and text messages, well, then who's listening to radio?
Right.
And radio has traditionally been a way to break new music to the world. It still is. I mean, don't misunderstand me. I mean, it's, I think it still is. And I think that the discouragement that the youth have is that they're not really feeling that radio is traditionally today about radio as much as it is about advertising.
Right.
And, you know, there's identity crises that go on in radio right now with stations that play music that nobody has a clue who the people are that are playing the music.
Right.
You know, in my days, we would, you know, our DJs and jocks would, you know, talk about the unusual effects on a guitar from Stephen Stills or something in a song. I mean, there was something that just made a branding kind of identity take place.
Yeah. Do you mind giving the website for MuseArt?
It's MuseArt, MuzArt world.org.
And just for the audience to know, you know, we just want them to sit around and just listen to what we're saying and understand what we're saying. We need them to take action to a certain extent. So, do you mind giving them an idea of what you're looking for in relation to their participation towards MuseArt?
Well, you know, we think that people need to take action in answer to the question, what would the world look like without music tomorrow? And we are certainly headed in that direction. Philadelphia was just, all of their arts and music programs were taken out of the school for funding.
Wow.
Music should not be an elective, you know. And if you talk to people on the streets, that's not exactly what they understand. They understand that it's all, you know, because of funding. And that doesn't necessarily have to be that way. We can create our own funding. So MuseArt has a desire to generate funds that go into an endowment fund that self-perpetuates through donations from the American people. The idea is to get the American people to support what they believe in, because it's pretty obvious that educators and administrative civic leaders have just sort of cast it as the first program that we cut when there's a budget cut.
Yeah.
And personally, I just think that that's just poor management myself as a whole. You know, but when it comes down to the actual system of education, somebody needs to learn how to balance a checkbook up there.
You
know?
Oh, man.
You know, it's not about, you know, Republicans and Democrats anymore. It's just about common sense. Mm-hmm. But there are cities all over the United States that are considered inner cities, for example.
Yeah.
They just get glomped up into those stats. And those children, you know, are like way below the national average. And then you have other states and cities that they're above the average, way above the average. So it just kind of gives us a mild sort of a medium across the United States, though, and across the board. Most states are right above the national average, which is really not all that great to begin with. So I don't think that in Akron, Ohio, or in Memphis, Tennessee, or Detroit, Michigan, or Los Angeles, California, or even some of the inner cities of Salt Lake City, Utah, I don't think those children should be denied an opportunity to study music just because maybe their parents don't make a lot of money or their demographics don't fit the national sort of standard, if you will. I think that, you know, that's the problem that we have with education, is that we just generalize. I don't think that any child should go through 12 years of traditional education without an opportunity to hold an instrument in their hand and get a feel for it so that they can determine if it's something that they want to do. And very specifically, I think that the first 6 years of their education is the time to do that kind of a thing. Because beyond that, they make their own decisions. And if we start them out young, and if in fact it truly does enhance their reading comprehensions, well, they make better decisions. So, you know, they stick it out, you know. Kind of like building a castle on the sand, you know.
Definitely. That's awesome. Now, that's the whole MuseArt goal, is to provide that opportunity for all individuals, no matter their income level, no matter where they're at in the United States. In order for us to build a strong nation, we definitely have to educate our people. And music education is one of the most important parts of education. It's like you can't separate that from education just because you want to drop it out of the budget. Like you said, that's not really possible. It's like a defeating type of... it's like throwing a grenade in a building, you know, just going to blow it up from the inside. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, maybe I could make a change to something you just said about it not being really possible. It is actually possible. It's actually happening. So for us, as a people, we have to take action and build endowment funds and, you know, volunteer time. You know, MuseArt needs people that are very skilled in social media. They need people that are skilled in the websites. They need money. They need services of all sorts, volunteers join in on the events that, you know, take place. We just raised a pretty good amount of money out of Los Angeles for an arts show that took place in Santa Monica at the Jeannie Matson Art Gallery. And, you know, it was about 400 or 500 people that showed up there in support of music and arts. And then that particular night, it just happened to be about art. But they were, you know, they raised several thousands of dollars for Muse Arts cause to continue on. So our goal is, like, for example, let's say if you're in Akron, Ohio, and you want one of our new tech schools. You know, people have asked me all the time, how do we get one? In fact, I had a conversation this morning with a lady from Memphis, Tennessee, who asked me, how do we get one? And, you know, the procedure is that we would, you know, ask you to request that we get involved. We would provide information for you, and then we would come into your community and look for 25 to 50 people in the community. We'd actually ask you to identify those players. Yeah. And then an equal mix, you know, a third of the top business guys, a third of the top educators, and a third of the government, like civic leaders and whatever.
Okay.
And then we would come, we would make a presentation and invite them to go on a field trip with us. And we would take them to one of our schools that are up and running.
Yes.
And then let them have the experience of what they could have. In other words, you know, I think everything in life is about an experience.
Right.
You know, if we create an experience, we do something called a buy-in. You know, once you get to own it because you bought into it, then there's a magic thing that happens. You take action. And then when you take action, there's also an even more magic thing that happens. We get a result. So in harmony with, you know, creating, getting these 50 people to a place where they can imagine what it could be like in their particular schools. Most of them don't even know. They have no idea. They've never even seen anything like that.
Right, right.
And then when they go there and they experience it, they come back to their communities. And then we have a consulting company that is part of our team, and they will actually design a program that works for the particular set of statistics that are involved in the community that we're working in. You know, because, you know, Akron, Ohio is not the same as Memphis, Tennessee, or the same as Salt Lake City. So everything is sort of individually customized. Yeah. And you might know that all of these schools that we're talking about are in public school districts. They are not charter schools. I think we have two charter schools involved in the number. But those charter schools are actually owned by the district. So they're in public schools. Yeah. You know, they just want to eliminate the competition. So they've got their own charter schools. But the thing is that, you know, people don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's schools all over the United States that are closed down. So we could go into a school that's closed and remodel it in some way, get it to where we need it, or we could build a new school from the ground up. Depends on what needs to happen.
It's a beautiful system. This is it's definitely a building machine. It's amazing to have ran into someone like yourself who's helped to push this to the forefront in more ways than one. You mentioned events earlier, and I think they told me that there's an Each One Teach One event coming up. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been scheduled for February 2nd out of Salt Lake City, Utah. There should be some press releasing taking place in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Announcing, you know, some of the bigger details of the show, but it is going to be a show that will be staged out of Salt Lake City, Utah. It will be broadcast clear across the world. It will be translated in 90 different languages, and it will be filmed so that people can actually buy the DVD, which will be an ongoing support system for the charities that are all involved in the project. And, you know, the idea is to bring to the table, you know, I think you may already know that we have several amazing children on the MuseArt team that are very involved with the Each One Teach One program. And, you know, I think you know that my cousin Gloria Brown, who has been very involved in Nina's World, who is out of Kentucky, you know, and there's 10 Ninas, you know, there's Tennille up in Canada, there's Nina down in Kentucky, there's AJ down in Las Vegas, there's Joey King, our little 13-year-old star, who's in, she's in the Dark Knight that just came out for Batman.
Oh, God, yeah, you guys are doing it big, as they say.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's like they're getting out there and they're making a difference, and
these kids are amazing.
So many. Yeah, they are. They're very amazing.
I've never met.
You know, so interesting. So some of them have not had any training either, which is crazy.
Oh, wow.
They just have gifts. They have gifts. You know, they were just given gifts from God.
Awesome. That's awesome. They have a big part in the MuseArt. Because when people see the children participating and giving their opinion and putting forth effort, you know, it kind of makes the adults look around and question themselves and see what they're doing for the world, you know? So it's definitely, definitely effective.
Well, you know, most people are good in nature.
Yeah.
Even those that are, you know, less accomplished than others, you know, I mean, most people want to do something good for the world. And people ask me all the time, well, you know, I'm just one voice here, you know, what can I do? And I sort of kind of poke around a little bit and find out what their style of life is and what they do and so forth and so on. And I almost every time I can find somebody, most all of us, that might waste $5 in, let's say, a 30-day period of time.
Tell me about it.
I mean, most people waste $5 a day, but let's just give it, you know, some radical sort of a comparison.
$5
every 30 days, okay? I mean, take the $5 and put it into an endowment fund. It's a tax deduction for beginners. And stick your $5 in there in hopes that, you know, MuseArt will continue to be very successful across the United States as well as the rest of the world. I mean, we are part of a board now that is part of the United Nations. The idea is to integrate education, entertainment, and technology together. You know, to show the world how they work, and it's a program being funded by the United Nations. And the idea is one of our founders.